Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Chronic.
Tick, 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 tick. Beastly boom, ladies and gentlemen. It is your favorite day of the week. We say this every week, and because we mean it. It's Meltdown Monday, and we are truly privileged on this beautiful start of your week to be welcoming the most incredible guest. Yes, we have uncaged him. The beast has been unleashed, and we are ready to welcome him to your audio airwaves and your visual senses. Welcome to The Meltdown. My name's Tom Finkiel. As always, if you're joining us for the very first time, welcome to The Meltdown. Go ahead and click that subscribe button, ring that notification bell, and make sure you know when new episodes are dropping each and every Meltdown Monday. Come and join us. It's one hell of a journey. And I'm not doing it all alone. Oh, no, no, no. Sat here in the UK bomb shelter in the MAN. I'm repping it in good old UK, flying the Union Jack, while he today is flying the Stars and Stripes. Welcome to Veterans Day, peeps. Thank you so much for your wonderful service. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the three-time tag team champion of the world and my tag team partner. Reach out. Take that tag. Ladies and gentlemen, the legendary Brian Clark.
Thank you, Tomcat. Always a fantastic intro, my friend. Hope you're doing well in Manchester today. I know you are. Looking so much better, and the cold is behind you, and you are ready to rock and roll, man. What a show today. But before we get started on today's guest, let's not get it twisted, ladies and gentlemen. My co-host is the three-time host of the year in UK, Guinness World Record holder, ladies and gentlemen. He can do it all. We know that. I'm going to go ahead and get us rolling here, Tomcat. Are you ready?
Always ready, brother. Yes, I have literally gloved up. I am ready to get in the zone.
The Tomcat is ready because he stays ready, ladies and gentlemen. I had the pleasure of meeting our next guest at WrestleMania in Las Vegas this past April. And he is our first UFC Hall of Famer here on The Meltdown. And we are excited to have him join us today. So here we go. He is an Arizona State University Hall of Famer, a 13-time national AAU championship from 1982 to 1984, a UFC Hall of Famer, a Triple Crown UFC champion, a Luthez winner, a Frank Gotch winner, George Tragos winner, a three-time GWA heavyweight champion, the LPW Hall of Famer, a three-time NWA champion, an NWA Hall of Fame in 2010, a game heavyweight champion, a War Hall of Fame recipient in 2017. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Meltdown, the Beast, Dan Severin.
Woo! Well, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
What an incredible list of accolades that is, bro. I think, you know, from the amount of time that it's taken to read that massive list of incredible accolades, I think we're pretty much done on the show, brother. I think we're there. What a sensational list. Welcome, Dan.
Oh, thank you. Well, just wait to see what I achieve as a senior citizen.
Yay! There'll be headlocks in every retirement home. There'll be some clubbing going on when that yoga is slow. Welcome to the Meltdown. It's going to be fun. We are going to take you on a beautiful little journey as a look back through a Hall of Fame career. We're going to play some games. We're going to have some fun. And we are going to keep things positive. Positivity is what we are all about here on the Meltdown. We want to promote good mental health. We want to enlighten you with the light side of the ring than burden you with the dark side of the ring. So let's keep everything fresh, but let's start at the beginning, Dan. So you have played such a massive role in the development of mixed martial arts into modern culture, but let's start at the beginning. Tell us about the start of your journey.
Well, I guess the start of my journey, I'd say began in junior high and aspects of just starting to get involved in sports in the school systems. So, okay. and actually having being involved in a physical education type program as well. It's things have changed over the years. And when you look at what junior high and what does high school even offer now for physical education, I'm sure Brian could probably tell you and really respond on this, that it's not even physical activities anymore that they really offer up in these programs. It's really sad. And how many people don't even participate in sports. So again, trying to stay optimistic, but then I have to point out certain aspects that one of the biggest downfalls for the American health system and nutrition system is obesity. Inside the United States, we just don't, people are not as physically active. I'm not saying you got to go to the gym and be like an Arnold Schwarzenegger lifting weights and things of that nature. I simply just going out there and just walking and engaging in exercise and get outside and get a little bit of the vitamin D, you know, from the sunlight. You know, going to have the opportunity to travel, whether it was for mixed martial arts or for professional wrestling, in my amateur wrestling career, of simply traveling around, not just the United States, but around the world, and to see how other people live and how they do things. I mean, I'm really impressed with like the Japanese culture.
Yes.
These folks, first off, it's a very, very clean country. No graffiti on buildings or, you know, things of that nature. It's very clean, no graffiti, and such polite people. But then you look at how they eat. I mean, things in moderation. It's, I think, again, it's the United States that are the king of the buffets. Yes. We want to supersize everything. We give these big drink gulps, big old sandwiches, and we even host eating contests.
You're right, though.
Excessive.
You spend a little bit of time in Japan, you really get to see, embrace yourself in that culture as far as, like you said, the eating part of it, how clean. They're really not as, obesity is not an issue over there. Here in this country, it is a major issue, especially the last 20, 30 years. It's just gotten, people have gotten bigger. Unfortunately, and like you said, I think it's part of just not going to the gym. Take some kind of physical activity. You don't have to be a bodybuilder to take care of yourself and get some fitness in.
Yeah, just a lot of other countries. Just when you look at how much they walk or they ride a bicycle. Again, United States, we motorize everything. We motorize our bicycles. We motorize our skateboards. I mean, it's crazy. There is creativity and ingenuity, and I think that's great that they do that type of things. But I'm trying to think. I'm actually surprised that Americans are born with actually legs anymore, because the less and less they do, you think that their limbs would be almost like disappearing.
Well, from a positivity point of view, if you are watching our show right now, please don't feel like you have to hold back from a YouTube basis because we are audio based as well. Yes, you can log on with your phone, put your earbuds in, get up off that couch, listen to the meltdown while doing a little walking outside, get that blood pumping through your hearts, through your veins, breathe in some fresh.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Share and live that life. I know it was always something that my mom was a massive proponent of, was not being inside, because she was a physical education teacher for 35 years in high schools here in the UK, and she retired about 15 years ago, something like that. She was still very, very active all the way through. So yes, big proponent, get up off that couch, do what you can do. You live and have one life. Take it to the max as best as you can. So there's a public service announcement from the Tomcat, the Bomber, and the Beast. Get off your couch, but have us in your ears at the same time.
Exactly. We know that you guys can listen and you can do your cardio. There are a lot of fans that message me and they tell me all the time, hey, I'm listening to the show. I just did an hour of cardio. So 1 hour of cardio, listen to the show. You got it, mate.
Yeah. I enjoy listening to music and stuff like that when I'm in, when I'm in my gym. But it's got, like, just like I said, as I drive down, that's when it's time to tune into what have I stockpiled up here. Because I got, driving from Coldwater, Michigan, out to Phoenix, Arizona, is an 1,850-mile journey. I've done it so many times that I go, and that's just one way. So it's like, and I do that a few times a year, and it's kind of like going, okay, I got lots of time to kill. How do I do it? Well, I do it productively. I'm listening to things that I have stockpiled up, or I go from phone call to phone call to phone call, knowing that I make good use of my time, except when I'm going into hills and valleys when the Wi-Fi doesn't connect all that well.
And you've heard it there from the Beast. Keep on flowing. Well, I'm going to bat it over to Brian in a second as we touch on more questions. But just whilst we're there, and it'd be nice as a nugget for our wonderful viewers and listeners to delve a little deeper into Dan the Beast 7. What type of music are you listening to?
Well, again, depending on what I'm doing. For example, we were just talking about the working out. When I'm in the gym doing workout, I'm an old rock and roll type of person, so I'm looking for that more with good beat and music to with it. So, but again, a lot of younger people, they like going, I don't know none of these people, because a lot of them have passed on, but I still like listen to the golden oldies of the rock and roll era. So it's that's my kind of music to listen to. It just gets you a little bit more amped up for a good workout.
I'm the same way. I have the earbuds in, and I've got a few stations that are programmed in that are just perfect for training. And it's a must for me. I'm not a guy that goes into the gym and chit chats and talks to everybody. If I'm not training at home, I'm in the gym, and before I even walk in the gym, the buds are in, and I may wave to someone, and I'm not trying to be rude. It's just a matter of I'm getting in my zone, you know.
Brian, a funny note on that is that I don't have the earbuds. I forget, I was on an airplane once and I had the earbuds with the thing that they plug in. So it's got the cord and all that to it. Yep. I put those in, I put the cord and I'll put it in my pocket. It's all I do. And people don't know, but right. it's my way of knowing that I only want to be in the gym 1 hour or less.
Right.
I'm very like, time-wise, it's like, I know what I want to get in there to do. And if people, then if I see some starting to push me, I'm like start bebopping my head or something like that. Like I'm listening to the tune. It's like going, and they're talking. It's like, going, eh. I just point and I just keep on going.
Brian knows all about that. He gets the full groove on when you're in the gym, big man.
Yeah.
I got to do it. Yes.
Have you seen the new thing as well? There was an advert the other day, and you know the AirPods are wireless, right? So the classic ones, as you've just described, Dan, had the wire, and the modern equivalent are wireless. Apple have just brought out a new innovative piece of equipment, which is a wire between the two, so you don't lose them. And it's like, you do realize that we had this all along. That's going to cost you an extra $50, right, just to have that. There you go. Oh, Lord. Honestly, marketing campaign. Dan's going through his bag.
I'm actually just looking in my bag right now because I just keep it. I keep it right in my carry-on bag there with me. So I got the hooks, stuff like that, to where I throw them in my ear to shove it in my pocket. Just as a way of, it's my escape from, you know, I don't mind chit-chatting after my workout is done, because workout is done. And even then, I'm only going to chit chat for maybe 10 or 15 minutes because I have other stuff to do. I do live a rather regimented life, and my life has been regimented for a number of years because I live out of a planner. And it happened with just all the stuff I kept trying to do, because, you know, at the time that I'm doing the professional wrestling, I'm working for Vince McMahon, WWF/WWE. Now it's like, I'm on their agenda, but I have a very unique contract where I know how many dates a year I have. And I know ahead of time, so that, Brian, this is actually pretty interesting, because I'm already going to be flying into, you know, again, if I'm flying into Phoenix, and I'm going to be there just for one house show or something like that. Well, I'll fly in the day before, but then I'll go to a local high school, and I might do a speaking engagement to the student, either to the whole auditorium or just to a couple of people. Or then I'd be going and doing like a seminar. So I do something like on a Friday, then a Saturday, where the show date. I was really impressed with how WWF how it was so structured and organized. You'd have three or four tractor trailers that would show to whatever building arena that they're at. And I mean, they just took over, and it was really a well synchronized system that they had there. And they're laying miles of electrical cording down and recording device. And all you do is at the talent, as we're approaching the doors, you just simply see all these paper signs that they just to be tape on the walls. It's like, you know, the cafeteria is this way, talent goes that way, Vince's office is this way. It's like you just have all these signs, then get a little bit further down the hall, there's more tapes right there, this way or that way, that you didn't have to think about anything, just simply react and do. The thing that really boggled my mind, and Brian might have something to say about this, was that these guys are being paid a great fee or salary, or again, it just all depends on how you want to look at it. And yet some people would show up in some of the worst type of shape underneath the influence of who knows what, but, or they lost all their gear. But the cool part about this big corporation was that they had a couple seamstresses right there that if you lost your gear, they'll, in the next couple hours, they'll whip you out an entirely brand new costume for you to wear for that night. They have hairdressers and that there that will dust the bags out from under your eyes. They'll color your hair for you. They literally could do almost everything except wrestle the match. And on a second night where basically it's basically an edited type of show, they could even do that. So it would just it boggled my mind that some of these guys and gals would show up underneath the influence of who knows what. I'm going, gosh, you can't show up like that to work. What makes you think you could show up to something like this in that same kind of condition and not get fired on the spot? So it's a strange industry.
Oh, it is. It is. There's nothing like it. Like you said earlier in the show, that there is you know, wrestling fans and the business that we're in, it's one of a kind. You brought up WWF, so I want to ask you while we're on this topic here. Did you have how much interaction did you have with Vince, and did you discuss your character and how much any
No,
time at all talking with
no,
him?
no. I mean, I met with Vince. Basically, Jim Ross is who.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
I had most of my dealings with in the very beginning. I mean, honestly, I was first brought into WWF at the time, just again, before even being signed up, I met with Vince, and I think there might have been Jim Ross at the time. Then Eric Bischoff reached out to me. So then I had a meeting with WCW. So they were actually, you know, butting head to head at that time. And then, you know, it was a little bit more of a stranger encounter what I had with WCW. But then I guess, you know, Vince and their office caught wind of this. And so they brought me back in, and they basically just simply agreed to really what was all on my terms. And again, I wasn't asking for nothing crazy. I just wanted to simply know my schedule ahead of time. I did not want to have this crazy. I didn't want to have all my eggs into one basket of knowing that I'm going to be on the road for whatever 300 plus days with this company. I simply wanted to know I had whatever I had going with them. And I think it was like 100 dates is what I had. So it was like a really scaled down aspect. And I had to know about my dates because I was still living out of that planner.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you were still doing the fight game and this.
Yes.
I mean, you really, honestly, if you think about it, you couldn't go on the road for 300 days and do the fight game. It just it wouldn't work. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that I was still allowed to work for the NWA. So again, that's where it's like very interesting because usually, you know, most people, whether it be WCW or WWF, they would be a lot more territorial. No, you can only work for us. But no, these were things that I was doing before because NWA was actually the very first company that I was working for. But then I was, you know, I'd be going over to Japan, and I'd be working for a couple other companies. So there was really no problem with that. But then I also said that I'm not going to be doing nothing crazy or putting people over I should not be putting over because I'm not there to make the NWA belt look weak by any means.
Right.
Yeah, makes perfect sense, right? Well, speaking of the NWA, as we are in the presence of an NWA champion, let's talk about the time you actually won the belt from Chris Candido in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, because I know Brian has a massive, beautiful lineage there as well in the Smoky Mountain Hills. Let's talk about one of our favorites, the Louisville Slugger, Jim Cornette. Tell us some Jim Cornette stories, Dan. Tell us about your experiences working with Jimmy.
Jim was paired with me. I don't know if he actually requested it or not. I think he kind of knew that I was not one of these vocal type of talkers in professional wrestling that I'm not going to go out there and going blah blah blah. Look at me, look at me. That is not me. It's kind of like you got with Brock Lesnar. He's got his own voice there as well. And I think there's just I think that a company like that just simply knows that. Who do they need to kind of assist? And, you know, Jim had already recognized this because, again, Jim can go out there and he could say, he's this, he's that. And all I got to do is go out there and just take care of business, you know, that type of scenario.
Love that. Well, that's what Brian does on a weekly basis, right, mate? He takes care of business. He's literally got a bad back from carrying me.
All these weeks. That is not true, Dan, by any means. No, but I know what you're saying because you think about it, like Lesnar had Paul Heyman forever as his mouthpiece.
Yeah.
And there have been so many guys like that. I was one of them myself. I had a guy that talked for me for a while. And just through, you know, It's like you said, it's the message of you are the presentation, and your manager there is his job is to get you over even more than you already are, but you can go out and do the job and take care of business. So I like that. It's always been a part of the business, and psychology wise, it flows. So I
Yeah,
like it.
and you do it. I mean, there's all kinds of different aspects about the industry, and the fact that there's singles matches, but then there's ways of going from a singles match then into, okay, I might be out in a ring, and then another bad guy comes into the ring, and they double tag me. Then all of a sudden, another baby face runs out from the back, and they run off the heels, and now you have a uniting of we want to get back at you. So there's it's a very easy psychology to understand. Sometimes I think some of the people in creative get way overcomplicated in some of their storylines. I'm scratching my head going, I don't follow this, and I'm from this
Yeah.
industry. So how's the general population going to be able to understand this?
Tom and I talk about that all the time. We're like, okay, we're tired of the run-ins. We're tired of, okay, tonight it's going to be a six man, or tonight's a 301, whatever it's going to be. I mean, just do the basics and let the crowd
Yes.
follow. Let the people at home follow it and enjoy it. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
We watched a show, didn't we? And this was only yesterday that we reviewed a show, Watch Along from WCW of a similar time. And it was meant to be an 11 on 11 battle royal that actually turned into like a 23 versus 16 with 18 different returns and weapon shots galore, shoes, people falling through stages and tables, and my brain exploded. That was it. Just give me a one-on-one, please. Just give me a one-on-one. Well, speaking of one-on-ones, one of the questions that I did want to ask you was, seeing as you are such an illustrious champion of the mixed martial arts world, being a UFC Hall of Famer and the very first and only UFC Triple Crown winner. Oh, yes. You were also in the presence of another great in the WWF at that time, that being Ken Shamrock. I always thought, as a fan growing up, watching Monday Night Raw every Friday here in the UK, that it was just going to be a natural fit. We were going to see a big build from both men to an ultimate climax on pay-per-view. Why did it not happen?
You're asking the wrong person. I always look at why did that happen? Okay, they have a creative team. Why did that creative come up with this? I would assume something like that should have happened, but I'll say that there were four of us between Steve Blackman, Owen Hart, Ken Shamrock, and myself. We were put into this shooter category is what we were put into it. And I don't know why, because I kept thinking, well, because I mean, Owen Hart really wasn't known as a shooter. I mean, he came from Stu Hart. He came from the Dungeon Dynasty, where Stu was putting out some really great talent for Canadian wrestlers. But I don't understand why we got put together as this clique. We just did, because it's like, as what Brock has shown, he can wrestle, all kinds of different types of people. So it's I don't know. I don't have I didn't have that crystal ball then, and nor do I have that crystal ball to even look back as to why did it not take place. Don't have a clue. But at the same token, I did not realize from a professional wrestler, the talent side of things, I did not realize how much control did I really have over my character, if at all. Because it's again, they came up, they just kept with the same storylines that I was given this ring name of the Beast from my MMA days, and so they just kind of carried it on over. Now, the funny note about that, the person who did give me the ring name was the legendary NFL Hall of Famer Jim Brown. So
Wow.
to me, it's like going, the fact that he was one of their play-by-play commentators for several shows, because they were playing off of football, and a football great is Jim Brown.
Right.
And so he was one of their commentators. Now, if you want a little funny story about it, the first time that I met Jim Brown, he did not know I was one of the fighters, because I had worked for two different universities, and standard protocol when you would show up to some type of a social media type of event was to wear a sports jacket, a tie, and I'm wearing glasses. Now, I could see up close, but I need glasses for distance. So I'm looking like somebody's agent because I'm wearing jacket, tie, and I've got Al Snow, a.k.a. Al Sarvin, is with me there, and he's wearing, you know, the tank top, stuff like that. So he's looking like the talent, the fighter, and everyone's looking at him. And then when the UFC announcer said, you know, we need all of the eight fighters up at the head table. So now I'm sitting up at the up in the head table, and I'm sitting on the crowd, and people are like, well, who's this guy and who's that guy up there? I mean, it kind of just threw them off. And then Jim Brown made the comment. He said to see you at the press conference, but then to see you the night afterwards, and to see you walking the way that you walk towards that cage, and then the transformation of you slapping yourself a few times and then climbing up into that octagon. He says, I never seen someone morph like that. But at the same token, throughout my entire amateur wrestling career, that was just to be part of my repertoire of what I did. I would be slapping my face up like that, and then climbing on in and actually split, you know, taking a sip of water, stuff like that. Because I would have even a mouthpiece in at that time, which even WWF, they love the fact that I would put a mouthpiece in, because I go, oh my God, this guy's actually going to get ready to fight for real, you know?
Yeah. Well, now, if you said that whole transformation, that's what I like about this Tomcat. You never know what kind of great conversations we're going to get here. And the inside scoops on stuff that I would never even think about with the connection of Jim Brown, you know, and then, of course, you know that the WWF is going to love the mouthpiece part because they're thinking everybody at home's, oh, this is a shoot. This guy's really going to put the boost to this guy. So, yeah, it all ties in. I love it.
Yeah. Again, I throw some tape on my wrist. So like I'm support my wrist. Because even then, professional wrestling was, you know, you could go, you know, most guys did not have any kind of hand garments. There was a couple times that I even went out to the professional ring, and I'd be wearing MMA gloves. It's like, if it's a tough report, I'd be slapping on a pair of MMA gloves and people like, oh my God, you know, he's got gloves on. I'm like, yeah, right.
That's the easiest way to work a punch. If you think about it, if you have the gloves, you can look like you're killing the guy, but you're taking care of it.
But also, in case you do stiff him, it's like it's going to be a whole lot less punishing if you actually get hit with a bare knuckle. Hurts way more than a pad of gloves.
Yes, yes.
Well, speaking of the name The Beast, that must have been ringing in creatives' ears when it came to the WWF, as you came at the similar amount of time that they were unleashing an unholy faction in the Ministry of Darkness. I want to talk a little bit about this and any kind of opportunities that you may have been offered to be a part of that particular stable.
Well, you know, when the creative team started to pitch this idea to me, I don't think they even got halfway through the pitch. And I put my hand up like a T and I'm going, the whistle, the timeout, guys, not going to happen. I'm not going to, you know, they wanted to put 666 across my forehead, of the Beast, the whole nine yards. And I'm going, you know, no, if I had been a nobody and this was my opportunity to go from one side to this, I would have kind of contemplated that. But I always, at that, when that was being pitched to me, I said, if you guys should drop me from the roster right then and there, that'll be the last thing that people ever remember about Dan Severn. Dan Severn's cheese has slipped off the cracker. He's gone to the dark side for real. He's got 666 across his forehead. He's lost it. So it's like, no, I am not going to go that route. I was flat against it. And then one of the road agents had the audacity to say, well, you know, Dan, we could start using you poorly. I go, what exactly does that mean? He says, well, we could have you start losing matches. I go, you can ask me to lose a match.
Yeah.
But I go, what if I turn fantasy into reality? So I was like going, I don't think they expected that from me. But at that point, I had bowed my back, and I'm thinking, well, you backed me into a corner. I'm going to come out swinging, because you don't back people into corners like that. So it's like going, and it even had crossed my mind coming up, because there was I forget the big pay-per-view that was coming up, where, I mean, literally, you know, you start out with only X number of people out in the ring, but then they start feeding people in every, what, minute and a half to 2 minutes that they feed in the next talent, so that the pay-per-view keeps going on.
Royal Rumble?
Royal Rumble, yeah.
Royal Rumble, okay.
Yeah, one of the big pay-per-views. Right. I kept thinking, I could probably reach out to Eric Bischoff and WCW and say, okay, gents, I already know what number I'm going into the ring as, and I know when I'm supposed to be tossed back out. I go, at the moment of being tossed out, what if I turn fantasy into reality? What's it worth to you guys for me to turn fantasy into reality, knowing that they will eventually get me out of the ring, but they haven't got me out of the arena yet? So I think I could have cut a pretty good salary for one night's worth of work. But at the same token, I'm one of the kind of people that believe that you're not supposed to bite the hand that's feeding you, but at the same token, you're not supposed to be screwing over the talent though either. So there was like a little bit of a conundrum that I'm dealing with. But all I know is that I basically just said, you know, to WWF that simply pay me out for the dates I have left on my thing. And I will simply just wash my hands of you guys, and you guys could be rid of me. And that's how we left it. So it's like, I didn't really get nothing more out of it. That fact that, but I still probably had, I don't know, 6 or 8 months on a contract that I'm just receiving my check.
And that happens a lot of times, Dan. I mean, that happened to me once or twice also, but it's creative. Like you said, they put you in that box and you're just like, okay, for example, giving you that gimmick of the 666. I mean, there were 100 other ideas they could have come up with besides that. And that's what someone on the booking committee got. And they said, oh, this is a great idea. And then four other guys said, oh yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do this. And it's not a great idea, but they don't want to come back off of it and go a different direction.
Yeah,
and they got to realize that you're the talent, you're the one who has to portray what they're giving you, and they don't understand that part of it. At least they didn't seem like they did.
Yeah, well, Vince Russo was kind of, you know, head of the creative team at that point in time, and I think Vince was running around. He had some crazy ideas. When there's some good ideas he came up with, but you know, it wasn't good ideas for me. Right. So I just, like I said, I'm just glad that we parted the way that we did. And to me, it's like, who knows what the future may hold.
Onward and upward, my friend. That's it.
Yep. Let's take a little trip from the zaniness of the World Wrestling Federation, or the WWE. And we will focus more on the incredible world of UFC as we come to our first game show position of this wonderful episode of The Meltdown. And at this particular stage in the game, I have just picked up the pen. Yes, we are about to make a list. It's time to play Mount Rushmore. And Mr. Seven, the topic we're going to give you today is UFC legend.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Who would you take out a hammer and chisel to your nearest mountain and carve out of stone? Four faces. I need four names. Who's
okay.
going?
Well, okay, the first name I should probably bring up would be Royce Gracie. And the only reason I bring out his name is because you had the business person. There was a joint venture between Horian Gracie and Art Davey. Art Davey was the businessman and the brainchild behind this UFC concept. And he even wrote a book called "Is This Legal?" because it was banned. It was, you know, it was banned in quite a few different states that, that now that they fight over, just like they fight over like a WWE pay-per-view coming up, or the way that they'll fight for like the Super Bowl of pay-per-views for WWE there as well. I mean, it's incredible how, you know, quickly, or I should say how big that has gone. But again, I'd give Hoist Gracie one of those slots. I'd give Ken Shamrock one of those slots.
Excellent.
I would give Don Fry one of those slots, and I would throw even myself in there, which, I mean, you've got four people from really the pioneer type era, but had it not worked out in that pioneer era, it would not be here today. So that's why I put them in. You know, Don Fry, why I put him in there. I mean, Don Fry was one of my wrestlers that I coached at Arizona State. He lived with a couple of my younger brothers, so I know Don much like a younger brother. And when he saw that I was in the UFC, he even reached out to me. He's like, hey Coach 70s, Ghost, can you get me in there? And I always tell people that I only helped Don Fry get his foot in the door. He kicked it wide open. But, you know, I could probably bring out a couple of Don Fry stories where I knew he had the fighting spirit in it because I witnessed him in the fighting spirit. So,
well, give us some of those. Give us some Don Fry stories. I mean, we're looking to promote you guys as well.
A Don Fry story would be that as an assistant wrestling coach, I would go out to a couple of the dance clubs with the wrestlers. They're like, Coach, we're going to be out to so-and-so. Come on out there with us. I'm a young single guy at the time, so I'm going out there. But it's kind of like going, I'm watching over because I'm a non-drinker. It's not that I'm being a prude or not. It's just that I don't like the taste of beer at all. So it's like I'm not going to drink something I don't like to drink in the first place. So I say that, I'm the one that's seeing clearly and take a place. So, you know, some of my wrestlers, you know, they're getting a little bit forward with the ladies or something like that. Maybe one of their boyfriends are getting mad, and they'll say, let's step outside. We're going to settle this like men. This was the era where you stepped outside. Okay. So as they're stepping outside, I would follow along. And then as we get outside, there are a couple of other people like going, well, you're not going to be jumping in this. I go, no. I said, my man is okay. I go, I'm here to make sure none of y'all step into this, okay? But that would be a Don Fry that I saw him get into a few scuffles like this. So he had no problem at that time taking a punch, but then he also was very good at delivering the punch. So when he got involved and saying, can you help me get your foot in the door? I go, he possesses skill sets that I did not possess. I'm thinking he will do just fine.
Love it. Love it. Let me ask you, with your long career, how are you holding up today as far as injuries? Do you have any lasting? I would think to some degree. I got a second part of this question, but the first part is how are you feeling physically as far as, I know you're still training in your gym.
Right? The point blank thing is for being a 67-year-old, senior citizen, because anyone that hits, you know, 60 years above, we get thrown into the senior citizen category. For the senior citizen category, I feel like I should be one of the alpha males of the senior citizen category. So it's like going, we can't turn back the clock of time, but you can embrace it. I always tell people, at least I still have hair to color. You know, I could still color the mustache. Ironically, throughout my entire cage fighting career and professional wrestling career, the color of the hair, the mustache and the eyebrows was just from Ren number 45. I did it the whole time. And I tell people that even now, I'm glad I still have hair. I still have the mustache. I can still color it even today. And I look a lot more like that guy because, you know, when I'm out doing different appearances at the Comic Con, the things of that nature, I'll have a couple of the belts on display, but then I'll have just a bunch of different 8x10s out there that are things from maybe the cage fighting industry or stuff from the professional wrestling industry, and then this other stuff that I've done along the way. And people are looking at those, and they're looking up at you, and they're looking down. I go, yeah, it's still me. It's just I'm the older version that's still standing here talking to you. Some of these folders are 20, 30, or plus years old, but it's like going, I'm still here standing talking to you.
Absolutely. That's the key. Another part of that question I was going to ask you, and I don't know. I know that Don has made a trip down to Columbia for the stem cell therapy.
Yeah.
I also did that trip, and I was curious if you did. You actually take that trip also?
Yeah. I think I took the trip before Don ever made it down there.
Okay.
I did go down there to try that, but I really question if I really got stem cells. Right, I'm a big believer in stem cells. I did a lot of research about it, and I still do even research about it today. When I do get back to Arizona, I will be making a trip just across the border into Mexico, and yes. I will be speaking with a company there that they can't open up their offices in the United States. Some of the things that we were speaking about off camera there, that they're just certain industries don't want to cure people.
Yeah.
Certain industries would rather know that you're hooked on our programs and you will be on our programs forever, knowing that you should be able to get cured. And that's the sad part, is that we have capabilities of healing different things about you, whether it's your physical, your mental, but there's things that we push certain drugs in that, or we allow certain foods to be consumed in our country that other countries would not even think of eating.
Exactly.
So, well, but that's where, you know, having people like Don Fry and I, you know, we had the podcast running for several years, Toxic Masculinity, because that's when masculinity was being looked down upon. Everyone, you know, just, you know, and I go, we could care less if you want to be a he, she, I could care less. Don could care less at that. I go, but it's like going, we lived in such a wacky world. Just call it what it is. I mean, comedy, there's been some great comedians that were playing both sides of the fence. They poke fun at themselves. What happened to the shows like Archie Bunker? You know, that guy, it was a comedy sitcom. You had The Jefferson, another comedy sitcom. You know, there were so many different sitcoms.
I got to throw my all-time favorite in there. Hold up. I got to – Fred Sanford, Sanford and Son.
Exactly. Sanford and Son. It was great. And it just – he always referred to his son as the idiot, you know, but again, these were poking racial type jokes towards each other, but they were jokes.
These jokes, yeah. Well, you know, Don Rickles, I mean, for years and decades, how many, you know, it's comedy. It's not meant to be harmful or hateful. It's just telling a joke, having fun.
Well, we just went through a very strange period of time for a reign of time, whereas people like going are saying, no, you have to refer to me as my nouns, my pronouns, my verbs, my adverbs. I'm thinking, dude, be lucky I could even come up with your name, okay? You know.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of pronouns, shall we hit a pronoun of legend? And I'm talking about someone, as we were just talking about age, someone who doesn't actually seem to age at all. If you check out his current social media videos, he is swinging Persian clubs over the age of 60. And that is someone who's had a big impact in your career, Al Snow.
Oh,
let's have a little chat about Al.
Al's great. I mean, how I ended up getting to meet Al for the very first time, again, I'm going back in time here now, but I was part of the Michigan Wrestling Club. It's just a when I was done coaching at Arizona State, Michigan State, I was employed being the Michigan Wrestling Club, where I just travel around the state of Michigan and I just working with other elite type of athletes. And the president of the club was a gentleman by the name. His real name is Dennis Kasperwitz. But his professional wrestling name was Danny Cass. And so during the and he worked for one of the Ford Motor Company. So during the week, I mean, he had his professional life of doing that, and then but he's also the president of the Michigan Wrestling Club, which it was all on weekends. But he was also dedicated as a professional wrestler. So when Denny and I would get together, we would conduct all of the club business first, and then when that was concluded, I go, okay, Denny, now I got to pick your mind there about this professional, because this was all right around this 1992 time period when I did not have a job down in Coldwater, Michigan, and so now I'm looking for whatever opportunities I can to bring in a check, and so he's like, well, he was really trying to discourage me for pursuing that, and I know why now, because a lot of things that we talked about, but he said, he goes, think about it. He goes, and he goes, if you still want to do it, he goes, I'll take you to this place. And this place was Al Snow, class, AKA Al Sarvin, Lima, Ohio, his training facility. And again, Al was a great guy, and a great sense of humor. He actually took, he was put into a kind of a crappy situation where he's part of this job squad, but he turned the job squad, because he's intelligent. He actually was able to use it in reverse that point, and gained a great deal of popularity. He started wearing shirts like "Pin me, pay me." So it's like going, he knows he's going to go out there and lose, but he's kind of almost making like a little mockery of it, and doing that part of the job squad. But he's very very intelligent, to the point that he comes up with this comedic dummy head. Mannequin's head, and to a point that he's being coached by the mannequin's head, but he put on even a match with the mannequin's head. So very creative type of individual, and now he actually still he works still today as an arm of of Vince's company, and he helps train young athletes, train and not only just physically train them, but then also help in their character type of development.
He's a wonderful individual.
Great mind for the business. Always been talented, like you said. He was just put into that pigeonholed into that little character right there. But he made the most of it, like you said. I remember when he had the mark across his head. He says, "Help me," and he got out with the head. But he made the most of that. That's when you know someone is really talented, when they give you something that is horrible. As far as putting you down at the bottom, and he still was managed to rise up and make it something and get the fans behind it. That's the key. And he did it. So.
But again, it wasn't just be a persona he put out there. I mean, it was for that, but I mean, genuinely, Al is just he's a good person, and he's very helpful type of person. So that's that actually kind of portrayed through there. Playing the psycho psychotic type person. I think Brian, you can attest to this. Just being involved in that industry, after a while, you start to lose a couple of your scruples, I think, because you like start thinking, where are we going with this one?
You're 2 or 3 weeks on the road, 25, 30 days in a row, just the constant grind. You really will start to lose it, as we call it, someone cracking. They crack. And so I've been part of that on both ends, so I absolutely know what you're saying here. I want to switch gears real quick, and let me ask you this. When you decided to go into UFC training, you decided not to tell anyone in your family, is that right? You sort of kept it
Correct.
to yourself?
Yeah, no. My very first introduction to that was when I again, I'm down in Coldwater, Michigan. I don't have a job. I mean, I moved my family net here out of a man's handshake and a promise when a word and a handshake meant something, and I did not have a job, and so I saw the very first thing I saw was like a tough man, little tough man flyer. But I had already started doing my professional assistant trainer by like a 1 week, one or 2 week margin that I even did do that. But in my very first tough man, I got to the arena early enough to where, as I see them setting up this, what I thought would have been a boxing ring, but it wasn't a boxing ring, it was a professional wrestling ring. So I had already been in a professional ring for the last couple of weeks. So I knew the dynamics of the ring and I knew how to use it to my benefit. And Tough Man only has two weight classes, 190 and under, and then anything over. Well, I was in that category of anything over.
Right.
And the comedic type side is, these guys are wearing either like boxing shoes, boxy trunks or athletic trunks, tank tops or whatever, and they're going out there. I've got nothing like this. I have on amateur wrestling shoes that kind of look like boxing shoes, and then I put on an amateur wrestling singlet. So I'm wearing this amateur wrestling singlet that probably looks like something from I don't know, the 40s or 50s. My hair and mustache is jet black. I don't know how to hold my hand. I probably look like John L. Sullivan himself,
Yes.
and people are laughing at me when I'm doing this. And even when they rang the bell, I got this big hoss. He throws a couple haymakers at me. I'm thinking, holy shit, what do I do? All I thought to myself is close the distance. So I basically hit him with both gloves. And as I hit him and I go, I got him backpedaling. I see that we're about to hit the middle of the ring ropes. So there's going to be this rubber band effect that's going to go wonk. And then I'm going to feel inertia come right back in. I go wonk. As soon as he came back in, I wrapped the ring around the body and I threw him in what is called a belly to belly in amateur wrestling. And the crowd exploded. They're all jumping up on their chairs. My opponent, he hits on his face. And I mean, he's just discombobulated. He's out of it. And even the owner, Art Door is his name. I think I'm pretty sure he's long gone. But to describe, he had this big mop of gray hair, gray beard, tuxedo wearing, and he jumps up out. He's got the microphone. He jumps up out.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Out of his chair, he hears the crowd. He's looking around. I look down at him. He looks up at me. He goes, "Well, throw him again." Am I going, game on? I can do this. So again, each time I went out there, I was like this wild barbarian out there. I didn't look. I didn't do a single thing that looked like boxing, because as you get close to me, I would collar tie you, I'd headlock you, I'd get an underhook, I'd hip toss you. It just when the show was done on Saturday night, as our Dora was talking to me, he says, "Son," he goes, "you don't know what you did for me." He goes, "We had a so-so crowd last night." He said, "After you threw that man," he goes, "word went out all over the place." He goes, "We had a sellout crowd here tonight because they wanted to see this wild hillbilly that's out here." That I go, he even said, he goes, "You didn't throw a single punch like a boxer would have ever thrown." I go, "I'm not a boxer. I did not know how to do this. I'm making it up as I go." But he was, he was very appreciative of what I did there. So
I can just
I thought
imagine
that's
the
cool.
pop now. I can just imagine the pop and the place going absolutely banana. What a story.
Oh,
I love that. Well, let's
yeah.
speak of the pop because the pop comes on our show when these hands come out because it is time to play another little
Uh-oh.
game with the beast and it's winner stays on. I'm going to give you two names, Dan. All you need to do is put one over and drop one like a lead weight as we go to the next. We
Okay.
will roll through a number of different names and find out who comes out with their arm raised high in the cage at the end. So, if we're ready, the topic we're going to play today with Dan the Beast 7, winner stays on, crossover, professional wrestlers and MMA fighters, people who
Okay.
have stepped both into the octagon and into the professional wrestling ring. And we're going to start out big with actual shoot fighters. We're going to go with Kurt Angle or Tito Ortiz.
Oh, okay, now are going into professional wrestling or going into cage fighting?
Whichever one you want, who would go over if you were booking that match? Who would you? I mean, you could do whatever you want. Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle stays on. Kurt Angle or Steve Blackman?
Tough fight, but I'd still give it to Kurt Angle.
Kurt Angle or Brock Lesnar?
I would probably go with Brock Lesnar again. This size difference, but then I'm also looking into youth. You know, don't get me wrong. I got him, but Brock's got the youth on him right now. It's kind of like I hate to throw myself in there, but it's going a lot of times there's comparisons between Brock and myself. Go, they're like, who would I go? Well, Brock, of course, he's a lot younger than me. He's a monster. Yeah.
Well, the Olympic gold medalist has just tapped. Kurt Angle or Ken Shamrock? Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar or Ken Shamrock. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Still Brock Lesnar.
Give me with Brock. Brock Lesnar or Matt Riddle?
Oh, Brock Lesnar, yeah.
Brock or CM Punk?
Brock.
Brock or Bobby Lashley?
Now we're bringing this up size, a little bit more competitive.
Yeah, right.
I'd still give it to Brock. I mean, the guy's got like, they had to make special gloves for his paw.
Yeah. I think paw is the right word.
I would call it a hand, but it's not a hand. It's a paw.
A glazed ham. That's right. Brock Lesnar or Alberto Del Rio?
No, Brock Lesnar, yeah.
Brock or Josh Barnett?
Still Brock.
Brock or Tank Abbott?
Oh, Brock.
Okay, now this it's intergender now. Brock or the superstar of Ronda Rousey?
Well, again, without a doubt, Brock.
Keeping with the beast incarnate, Brock or Butterbean?
I like Butterbean. He's Brock would not be pushing Butterbean around because Butterbean's got some physical stature and Butterbean knows how to SWAT. Mm. He's known as that would be a very interesting. This is one where Brock would not want to stand toe to toe with the Bean because the Bean has been hit. I would that'd be a matchup. I'd love to see. I'm gonna give that one to the Bean.
Butterbean goes over the beast incarnate.
I'm kind of going against myself here a little bit because that's where Brock's got that grappling ability, but if it stays on her feet, which the Bean would love to do, the Bean was pushing. Gosh, he had to be what 350 or more.
Oh yeah. Yes.
But because he's built like this 4x4, the moment that he shift that weight, he knew how to shift that weight just to whether he hit you in the rib cage or not, he caved your rib cage in.
American icon. We love Eric. Final name. And I didn't know whether a Brock could make it all the way to the end, but Butterbean has taken the mantle. And this match would be pay-per-view all over the world. Who's going over? Butterbean or Dan the Beast 7?
What kind of a match?
This is difficult now because now you're throwing it back on me, right?
I should have asked that between Brock Lesnar and Butterbean. Is it going to be a boxing match or is it going to be an MMA match? Because if it's an MMA match, Brock might have stood more of a chance because he's got that wrestler's background.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
If you got him on the ground, yes, I could see that. But like you said,
it's like, what are we doing? Are we playing tiddlywinks? Are we?
No, it depends on.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, let's finish it on tiddlywinks. But no, let's go the beast against the bean, MMA. Let's do it.
I'll put over bean.
Oh,
you absolute legend. Excellent job. Yeah. You are the man, the myth, the legend, and the bean has gone over. I'm going to send this to the bean.
I love who doesn't love the bean? He's such a good guy. I mean, I've been to a couple of different of these Comic Cons. They're with them, part of the same booth that we're together. Just a good guy, very very helpful. And I mean, what he did for himself, or I should say, what? Why am I drawing a blank here right now?
DDP.
Say it.
Was it the DDPY yoga program?
Yeah. When we went to Diamond Dallas Court, Diamond Dallas Page's transformation, because the bean was in sad shape, but what Diamond Dallas Page helped bring to it. But you still, you can have all the material. People can write down all the workout programs that you need to see, but you still have to have that willpower to put it in. It's like the gym. Anyone could go to the gym. Are you going to be able to work hard? Are you going to be able to push yourself? Because not too many people have got that. Not too many people have got that cheerleaders around them. You got to be self-motivated. Like professional wrestling, you got to be self-motivated. MMA, you have to be self-motivated. It's like team sports. I love playing football. In high school, I loved playing football. I had my three sports. I was in fall, I was in football, wintertime, wrestling, and in the springtime, I was on track and field. But even in track and field, I had to deal with the track coach that he simply knew that if there was a Saturday track meet and a Saturday amateur wrestling meet somewhere, he was not going to see me at the track meet because my investment was, how am I going to go to college? I have to do it myself. And I already knew that I had some college coaches that were looking at me for the sport of amateur wrestling. So if I invest a little bit more time in my amateur wrestling, maybe I can get this amateur wrestling scholarship and go. But yeah, it wasn't going to be for football because you have to rely upon 10 other players to do their job as well as you doing your job. If someone misses a tackle, if someone misses a block, you lose as a team.
Right.
You know, the sport of amateur wrestling, it's called a team sport based upon individual performances. The team can lose and I can still go on. And that's why I chose the sport of amateur wrestling. And that's kind of how it's like played over my life because, you know, come down to Coeur, Michigan, and then having the rug pulled out from underneath me, I had to survive on myself.
Betting on yourself, Dan. That's it. Yeah. Well, I want to say, man, this has been such a pleasure having you today. Just reminiscing, going through your stories and learning more about you. Absolute pleasure. I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. And it was fun. I knew it would be. I knew it would be a great conversation and absolutely classic. Loved
we
it.
We could have talked for hours. There was much.
Oh, no,
so
this,
much.
Yeah. I agree. We could have easily talked about all kinds of things to all kinds of directions. If any of the folks that have the chance to view this, if they want to get back in touch with me, DanSeverin.com. So if you can put that up on the screen, DanSeverin.com.
That's my email.
I would push them towards the website, but the website, it's still not good. It's kind of like just reach out to me. I'll aim them in the right directions then afterwards.
We will be happy to do that.
Absolutely. Well, being a positive show, is there any final positive words that you would like to send out to the Meltdown listeners?
Well, what I'd like to say there is like the ring name The Beast has a lot of negative connotations. Dan Severn is not a negative type person. So I came up with an acronym that stands for The Beast. The word the, T-H-E, stands for Dan Severn himself. I'm a teacher, humanitarian, and I'm an educator. I actually have a teaching degree from Arizona State University. And my message to young people is beast. To believe in yourself, to educate yourself, to adjust your everyday attitude, to study hard, and then to teach others because you can't take it with you.
Wow.
What a finish. Absolute words of wisdom from the legend. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me, no matter where you are, unless you're driving, in putting your hands together at the absolute grace of the legend, Dan the Beast Severn. Thank you so much.
You would not want to be driving with me then. I'll tell you that at the time because I do behind the driving wheel. I do everything you're probably not supposed to be doing there. I'm eating, I'm drinking, I'm on the cell phone, I'm writing notes, but I don't do it in traffic. But because, you know, if I'm driving that from Coeur, Michigan to Phoenix, Arizona, and I've got 1,850 miles, I am making phone call after phone call. As long as I got Wi-Fi, business, nothing waits. Business has to take place.
It certainly does. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Dan the Beast Severn! What a dream come true. He is our first UFC Hall of Famer NWA World Champion, and right now he is an official alumnus of the Meltdown. He has literally just joined the ranks of other legends that have graced our show, and we can't thank him enough. Ladies and gentlemen, the legend of Dan the Beast 7. What a chat, Brian. What a chat.
It was absolutely even better than I thought it would be. I knew it would be great, but just a wonderful conversation, being able to go back through his history, but also get those nuggets of things that we didn't know about, that probably a lot of our fans who are listening to the Meltdown across the world didn't know about. And now they're going to get to hear some of those history lessons from the Beast himself. So I'm excited, really excited about this episode. We've had world karate champions. We've had world wrestling champions. We've had it all. Intercontinental tags, the works. And now we have our first Hall of Famer MMA absolute legend, and there will be many more.
Absolutely. I love the acronym they lined up at the end for the Beast. Priceless. Absolutely priceless.
He is dropping knowledge on this episode. Do not miss it. If you catch on the end of this, turn it back around and hit play and start it all over again. It's worth it.
Absolutely, 1,000%. Well, he is a Hall of Famer, and our big man over there, yes, the Wrestling Life Hall of Famer, is also going to be with a WWE Hall of Famer this coming weekend as we take on Tucson Comic Con, and we're going to be shake, rattle, and rolling, baby. Oh, yeah. It's going to be an incredible weekend with the one and the only Honky Tonk Man. He's a character.
Yeah, it will be fun. That will be some interesting conversations and some fun conversations. But, I mean, you, the Tomcat, getting ready to be with the legend himself. Wow, man, you got to be pumped up about that. And
obviously, the line is definitely going to be there.
And new Intercontinental Champion.
Well, right? Let's talk about that just for a split second. Sure. We are recording on Veterans Day. It's Tuesday. And as it was last night on Monday Night Raw, John Cena becomes the Grand Slam champion, defeating Dominic Mysterio for the Intercontinental strap. As I mentioned to Brian off air, I'm just hoping that it doesn't deter the steam train that Dominic was on. Brian is very, very confident and hopeful that things will pick up a mesh for Dirty Dom. But congratulations go out to John Cena, officially Grand Slam champion. Will he be bringing that IC title over to Liverpool with him?
Good question.
We'll see next week. I'll be dropping some pictures in. But if you've yet to get your tickets in, do it now. Make sure you are there and joining us live and in person for Comic-Con Liverpool. Well, I'm going to put a nice big bow on today's show. We have had some Meltdown mailbag questions as well, Brian, sent in to us. In fact, I'll drop some names right now. Giorgio Mosley has dropped us a little mailbag question just while we were recording. And Jerry Lewis, who is our Wiccan 1975,
yeah,
he's just dropped us a message as well. Thank you so much for being a part of our premieres, guys. It means a lot to us for you to be leaving your comments throughout the course of the show. We're going to be coming to your Meltdown mailbag questions next week as we present another incredible review show. It is going to be epic. And from what I've heard from the feedback chain, there was lots and lots of positive comments scouting around social media when it came to our watch along. So we're going to be making those a little bit of a regular feature as well. But for me over here in the MAN, I'm going to say a big happy birthday out to my daughter Sophia for tomorrow. We love you, honey. And good luck to my son Charlie. He's just off camera, just met the Bomber and the Beast. So he's going to be going for his black belt in Tsutemi Shukokai Karate. He can do it. Come on, brother. About a 3-hour grading, Brian. 3 hours worth of grading. He's going to smash it. So, yes, from me here in Manchester, we'll love you and leave you. Remember, shoes ain't cheap and booking ain't easy.
There he is, the Tomcat, dropping that knowledge on all the Meltdown universe. Thank you all so much for joining us today. And again, Dan the Beast Severn, Hall of Fame career, and just an absolute legend. We are very very happy that he was able to spend some quality time with us and have another wonderful conversation. You guys have a great week. We will see you very soon. Breaking necks and cashing checks. Until next week, everybody.
Oh, boom.